Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Jen Gerson, writer and editor with the National Post. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Welcome back to Canada Land Shortcuts.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Tim Herron, Eric Lavallee, Matthew Block, Peter Gibson, Mason Manrahan, Stephanie Murphy, Che Erasmus, Jen Gowan, and Ben Gresick. Ben, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because Jesse made me feel guilty about listening to Canada Land for free, but I enjoy the content so much that I couldn't stop, so I had to pay.
This episode is also brought to you by FreshBooks, the original sponsor of Canada Land, FreshBooks.com, painless billing, cloud accounting. Jen, this is a Canadian company that is giving away thousands of free meals to needy people this holiday season in a partnership with Second Harvest, who do good things. And what else can I say about FreshBooks? I'm going to say things I've said before because I believe them to be true. I use FreshBooks all the time. It saves me time and money. It has an incredible mobile app that is wonderful. If you are a person who has to file invoices, if you have to file receipts, expense receipts, it makes that a lot easier. It shaves time off of the boring administrative stuff I got to do every week. It gets me paid quicker. And I recommend it to freelancers and small business people anywhere. You can try it for free for 30 days. It's a good time to try it for free because you can get your whole 2016 onto FreshBooks, which will be make life easier for you come tax time. When you do become a customer after that 30-day free trial period, tell them that Canada Land sent you. You will be doing the show a favor. FreshBooks.com, painless billing, cloud accounting. Check it out. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. but often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. That's BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Okay, Jen, we're about to hear what it sounded like when a mob of reporters were allowed into the apartment building that belonged to the alleged shooters in San Bernardino.
Okay, well, we're about to walk inside because they've got the door open, and you can see there's a crush of cameras here. There's people holding up their cell phones, taking snapshots. This is a prayer rug. There's a teddy bear here.
All right, so we've got quite a number of pictures of children here. Yeah, this is clearly a birthday party that was taking place with the cake and the smiles.
Let's make sure we don't. Let's,
okay, here's the first
let's make sure
we're
we don't see the children. Let's not show the child, Carrie.
But of course, you could see the child. That was broadcast live on MSNBC, who later apologized. They regretted showing that. They showed the ID of one of the alleged shooter's mothers. They basically doxed her. And I don't know. I mean, like, the first thing is it was pretty gross just to see this private residence with the nursery filled with reporters just rifling through everything. I mean, I guess before we get into it beyond that, like, that was the just emotional reaction I had to seeing all these reporters there. Did you feel the same way, Jen?
Yes, I suppose the part of me that still has human emotion did feel that was a bit gross. But here's where I kind of confess that I'm a terrible human being. You know, I came up through reporting and journalism, and like most of us do. And you know, if I'm standing outside the San Bernardino shooter's apartment, and the landlord lets me in, I'm going into that apartment every single time. No question, no regrets, no guilt. I will do that. You know, if you're a journalist, you know, and you're coming up through reporting, you get used to the idea of, okay, yeah, I will go through someone's garbage if I can, you know, if that's legal, if it's legally permitted for me to do that, sure, no problem. You will get used to the idea of doing everything that is legally permissible to get information about your subject or your targets. I don't think that there's any debate among journalists that, you know, simply broadcasting that stuff live was really dumb, for obvious ethical reasons. I mean, putting out pictures of the kids, putting out, you know, family members related to these shooters puts them obviously at risk of some kind of vigilante justice. It puts them at risk of harassment and abuse, which they don't deserve. So, you know, no question that the organizations who shot that and broadcasted it without any kind of discretion live were profoundly dumb and unethical in doing so. But can I fault them for entering the apartment and snooping around if the landlord let them in? I probably would have done the same thing. I really would have.
That's the job, I guess. And there is actually this question as to whether or not that was okay. The FBI had cleared it as a crime scene and turned it over to the owner. And then if the owner allowed the press in, then maybe that's on him. I mean, there's legal issues there. I don't know if you can just, because people are accused of a crime, you can, you know, I don't know what the laws are there. And apparently he was taken away in a police car. The local sheriff's department said that it had not been cleared as a crime scene. So obviously there's some haziness and confusion. But yeah, the journalists are there to get the story. The reporters are there to report. Everyone's curious about this. The whole nation's watching. And you can just sort of see the pack mentality as the plywood was ripped off. And everyone just goes in there. It was that filter that was lacking Should we hold up this ID to the camera? Is it tasteful or appropriate? I mean, you can get into some sort of like very practical ethical questions of when you're exposing someone's identity and you're exposing them to the possibility of vigilante justice. And then there's just like, come on, that's a little kid's toy. That's their, I don't know.
I would have broadcast the toy every single time because that's good pathos there. But I wouldn't have broadcast. I wouldn't have broadcast the pictures of the kids. That to me would have been over the line, no question. But I mean, even if the pack hadn't been there, you're going to tell me that as a reporter, if you're the only person who's at that plywood door and you're the only person who has the opportunity to enter that apartment, that you're not going to go in? No way. Not yeah, if you do in. This job. No, there's no way. You will go in every time and you'll be like, I got the scoop.
And I'm not going to take the high ground. I mean, we're going to reprint what some of these tweets in our coverage. And we had a discussion here at the office of whether it was, should we be showing the tweets if we're criticizing that they were tweeted? Yeah, we're going to show that stuff because how can we report on what the media did if we don't show what the media did? Now, here's a specific thing that sort of put it on my radar in talking about what the Canadian media is doing. That night, the CBC headline ran on CBC.ca, reporters root through San Bernardino shooter's apartment on live TV. This is Lauren O'Neill reporting on a CBC news story. And it's all about how, you know, a sort of a finger wagging account of all of the journalistic transgressions that took place that we just discussed here. And among those reporters were three CBC reporters. There were three CBC reporters in the apartment, which was not necessarily overlooked in the CBC article, but this is how they dealt with it. I'm quoting from the article here. CBC's Matt Kwong, who was inside the apartment, said reporters were leafing through papers, splaying out baby photos on a bathroom floor, holding up Islamic literature, and rummaging through food in the couple's pantry. That almost suggests that the CBC reporters were there to report on the other reporters and not to do what everyone was doing, which was like looking at these things and tweeting them to the world, which the CBC reporters were doing.
Well, you know, I went to school with Matt Kwong, and I know him quite well, and he's a really brilliant reporter. But again, we have to draw the distinction between the sins here. Entering the apartment, which at this point I'm presuming was not illegal because, of course, they had legal permission to enter that apartment, is not a journalistic crime. Rooting through those files and documents, if the landlord had permitted it, is no transgression. It's the sin here was in broadcasting that stuff live and without discretion or thought to what they were broadcasting. That was what was the problem here. So I can't really fault the CBC for being in the apartment, and I think actually the CBC deserves some credit for not engaging in that really base instinct to broadcast live as there was this live media looting, right?
Hold on, is a live tweet not a live broadcast? Is that the distinction that you're drawing?
No, I don't think that there's a sin in a reporter doing everything within his legal ability to find information about the shooters. That is fine to me. I think the sin was in indiscriminate broadcast. That was the problem. And I mean, to be honest with you, that is something that all of us deal with all the time. I mean, reporters find stuff, pictures, items, pieces of information that we feel that for ethical reasons we can't broadcast. That happens constantly. So the issue isn't in finding the information. The issue is in deciding what goes out into the public.
Right. And to be specific here, what Kim Brunhuber and Matt Kwong, the things that they were live tweeting were, I think it was Kim did tweet a picture of a bunch of documents and photos, but it wasn't like, I don't know, it's sort of hazy borderline. Like maybe you could kind of zoom in and make something out of it, but it wasn't like some of the MSNBC stuff where they were holding up an ID or a photo of a kid to the camera. I think that you're right, the sin is in the broadcast, but there's a second problem when you later report on that without really, I think you could read the CBC report on the website without knowing really that the CBC reporters were absolutely taking part in the exact same behavior.
Well, it's here, but again, I mean, they weren't at the same time. Yeah, okay, I'm glad that they disclosed that their own reporters were in the room as well. That is appropriate. But I don't think the CBC did anything wrong there. You know, if the CBC had engaged in this kind of, you know, putting somebody's driver's license through their Twitter account or broadcasting identities of the kid or broadcasting pictures of the kid, yeah, I think that criticism would be much fairer. But I don't see where the CBC erred. That's my question here.
I guess I'm saying this, and if the headline had been reporters, including ours, root through San Bernardino shooter's apartment to unlock.
That's just bad headline writing. Come on now, Jesse. Bad headline writing.
The sense that they are exposing these other reporters was the thing that galled me. And that's all I got to say about it.
That's all I have to say.
I'm Brian Lilly with the Rebel.media. Barbara Kay, columnist with the National Post. She has a new column out on, I believe it's called Bill 59. What's worrisome about it?
If passed, would allow individuals or the Quebec Human Rights Commission itself to initiate lawsuits against people that create fear of the other.
Jen, why do I have to resort to Brian Lilly and Barbara Kay in order to play a media clip about Bill 59? Why is it only the Rebel and the National Post that have been talking about this Quebec bill that would severely limit speech?
Well, that's an excellent question, Jesse. I also am curious as to why you have to resort to Brian Lilly and the National Post in order to have completely legitimate questions about Bill 59 answered. I think that this is a prevailing question that I have. And oh, my God, I have so much to say about this. Do we want to talk about the Bill 59 itself?
Yeah, let's give people a bit of a quick summary as to what this thing is.
Okay, so Bill 59, as far as I understand it, is an attempt to try and reinstate the kind of Section 13 hate speech laws that were recently abolished from the federal side back in Quebec. It is a law that is trying to strengthen hate speech provisions and give human rights tribunals really broad authority to sort of instigate investigations and conduct investigations on behalf of marginalized individuals and groups. I think you and I are kind of aligned on a lot of this stuff. I think you and I are pretty close to free speech absolutists on a lot of this stuff. The concern that I have about the way hate speech laws in Canada go is that, typically speaking and traditionally speaking, it is very, very hard for the state to come up with a coherent definition of a hate speech law that doesn't wind up growing and encompassing more and more and more kinds of speech. And that creeping encroachment, that creeping sort of attempt by the state to police and clamp down on what kinds of speech is acceptable or not acceptable, I think should be of concern to anybody who writes and opinionates for a living. My real, real problem with a lot of these types of hate speech laws is that I think that by trying to clamp down on hate speech, you actually create a culture and an environment that creates more vitriolic, nasty discourse toward marginalized groups in the long run. When you create an environment where polite society can't engage in reasonable, non-bigoted discourse about the problems with, say, leprechauns, what you actually wind up doing is you push the anti-leprechaun sentiment further and further and further into the extreme. And then you hand over control over that narrative to the most extreme anti-leprechaun elements. And that, I think, is what we've seen happen over the last 10 to 15 years, as it has become more and more difficult and unacceptable and wrong to make cogent, reasonable criticisms of Islam, just as we would make cogent, reasonable criticisms of Catholicism or any other religion. Essentially, what you've done is you've handed enormous moral soapboxes over to more and more extreme figures. When you start treating people like Sam Harris or Ayaan Hirsi Ali as bigots, as people who are outside the realms of polite society, you actually hand the narrative over to people like Donald Trump and Ann Coulter. And that is my concern with hate speech laws generally, that they're almost like drug laws. The more heavy-handed the state tries to become in trying to clamp down this stuff, the more valuable and more nasty the actual problem becomes.
Well, you said a lot of smart stuff there, but that was never a summary. That's the last time I'm going to ask you to summarize anything.
I can't stop talking.
Okay, I'll give it a shot here. So, yeah, Bill 59, Quebec bill that essentially moves the bar from, and I agree with this, we should not be able to say, let's go kill Catholics. And I think all reasonable people agree you shouldn't be able to say that. A step below that is, I hate Catholics. I think you should be able to say that. I think there's a big distinction between let's go kill all the Catholics and I hate Catholics. I don't hate Catholics, but I think you should be able to say that. And this law essentially even goes one step further and says we should all be afraid of Catholics is something that this law says should be illegal, anything that actually creates fear of the other, even more so, this Bill 59 criminalizes speech that hasn't happened yet. If the person has knowledge that such speech is about to be engaged in or disseminated, this law steps in. So this is a pretty big overreach of speech, a big encroachment into freedom of expression in general. And not only has it been ignored by the rest of the media, besides the National Post and The Rebel, but it's been ignored by Penn Canada, who I, full disclosure, have done a little bit of volunteer work for. And it hasn't really been touched on by Canadian Journalists for Free Expression, who are a sponsor of this show and who I do more volunteer work for. And I wonder why that is. I don't wonder why. I know why it is. I think it's because the intent of Bill 59 is to curtail anti-Islamic rhetoric, which is awful in this country and reached a fever pitch and boiled over to actual violence on the streets during the last election. But I'm going to surprise a lot of people here who think, I mean, I do think, I get a lot of email from people saying to me, oh, Islam isn't a racist. It's not racist to say anti-Islamic things. No, I'm sorry. It's not racist to say anti-Catholic things, because the result of that speech is not visited upon an ethnic minority. The result of anti-Islamic speech is visited upon a visible ethnic minority. It is racist to say virulently anti-Islamic things. That, whether that's your intent or not, that's the outcome. And I'm sorry, I hate that speech, and I think you should be allowed to say it.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are completely aligned on this one. I think that there are limits to when I say I'm a free speech absolutist, I don't actually mean that, because I do think that there should be some limits to free speech. I don't think that we should be able to utter threats. I'm comfortable with a law that prohibits uttering threats. I don't think free speech should extend to that. I'm comfortable with laws that shut down people who incite violence, who actively go out and incite violence and say, you know, we should be killing the leprechauns. That is, I'm okay with the state taking control at that point.
You are so much smarter than me to use leprechauns for your hypothetical, and for some reason, I have no problem with Catholic people.
You hate the Catholics, Jesse. Just own up to it. But I think that's correct, and I as I said, it's I have increasing concerns with the degree to which we are attaching causation to speech. I have increasing concerns with the degree to which we will very casually say, you know, that piece in a newspaper or that cartoon was racist, so therefore it should never have been published because look at all these terrible things that are happening in the world to mosques. I don't think that I need to even just say, of course we should not be doing bad things to Muslims or mosques, and that I think that the rhetoric, the anti-Muslim rhetoric in Canada, but particularly in the United States, has gotten wildly out of hand. But is the state the best tool for trying to crack down on that?
I actually don't have the same problem you do with finding that kind of causation. I absolutely think that if the ruling party of this country goes on a crusade against the niqab, then that there is a link between that and violence on the streets. But
that's a pretty clear correlation causation fallacy, Jesse. And the other issue that we have here is that the number one group that is still overwhelmingly targeted by hate speech, according to Statistics Canada, are Black people. Black people are still the number one targets, second only by gay people. Gay people are number two. And if you're going to look at violent incidents against marginalized groups, gay people top the list on that front. The number one religious group that is targeted by hate speech is still Jewish people.
Yeah, what I'm saying simply, Jen, is that this whole like, oh, it's just sticks and stones. It doesn't actually. No, words do matter. People do base their actions on words. But the responsibility in law for those actions is on the individual who perpetrates them, not on the person who says those things. And we have to tolerate in an open society awful speech that I find deplorable. And I agree with you 100%. The way that we deal with that is by mocking and disparaging. I don't necessarily think we have to publish those people. I think it's perfectly okay to say, you don't have access to my forum. I'm not going to signal boost you. But I agree with you that the state has no role in that.
And I agree with you on this. And I would also point out that I would draw a very important distinction between people saying, oh, you're the National Post, you're bad because you published this, I disagree with this, and force us as editors to reconsider our decision to publish certain comments and columns. That is part of healthy discourse. I'm open to that. I welcome that kind of debate. But I think that is a very different thing from human rights tribunals and the state, whose authority is backed by its ability to deprive you of your property, freedom, and at the most extreme ends of your life. should be enforcing speech codes. I'm philosophically opposed to that, and it's the closest thing I have to an absolute value.
The problem with the National Post is all the opinions that it doesn't publish. That's my problem with the National Post.
You know, I find criticism of the National Post very amusing, because the most virulent and convinced critics of the National Post are often the ones who read it the least often. You know, I don't really want to get into the National Post in particular, because I think there's a couple of rabbit holes we could fall down there. And certainly, you know, I don't agree with 100% of the things that we write there. I really don't.
Jen, you're being trolled. It's okay. I'm sorry.
I know. But at the same time, on the whole, is the National Post a place where I'm pretty proud to work? Yeah, absolutely. On the whole, I think we stake out pretty reasonable conservative positions on most issues, with some dissenting columns among them, and I'm comfortable with that. But that's just my position and my opinion. And that's, again, those are other rabbit holes we could fall down for sure.
Hi, I'm Shad, and you're listening to CBC.
Again.
Hi, I'm Shad, and you're listening to CBC.
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 C.
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 All of it now.
Okay. CBC.
That's it. Right. That's perfect.
Nice.
You're going to be great at Q.
Well, it didn't work out that way.
Do we have to be mean to Shad? Do we have to?
We have to. And you know what? Poor Shad. Like, I saw this coming when I spoke with him. The Globe and Mail, Simon Haupt, who I guess is a full disclosure there, wrote a bit of a negative piece about me and I've had my interactions with, just wrote like a Shad, full-on Shad takedown, question, why is Shad so bad, in the Globe and Mail. And I'm more interested in the comments that followed that piece than the piece itself. But, like, they set the guy up. They set the guy up, Jen.
Okay, so I have to start by saying I've been on Shad's show a couple of times, and, you know, honestly, I find him lovely. You know, I enjoy talking to Shad. I enjoyed my time spending time with him, and, you know, I've been on his show, so there's full disclosure right there. I think if the CBC wanted someone who was super good at radio, they would have picked someone who was super good at radio. They would have picked someone who had that background and had that experience, who had the journalistic chops and the broadcasting background to be able to pull that off. They very consciously went away from that model. They very consciously chose someone whose expertise and talents were in a totally different direction, thinking that they could develop him and bring him up to where he needed to be. I think it's probably a little bit early in his radio career to say Shad is bad and irredeemable and they should just get rid of it. I think that's still really early. I get the sense when listening to Shad that he's over stage managed, that they don't really give him the leash that he needs to roll with things. That, I mean, Simon pointed this out in his column, that it seems like he's reading prepared questions from the list and seems unwilling or afraid to go off script. And as any interviewer, either through radio or through print, will tell you, going off script is what you need to do. The first opening questions that you might prepare are just the seeds of the interview. You have to sort of follow trains of thought as they go along. And if Shad's being over stage managed, and if he's being told that you know these are your 10 questions and you stick to this, he's never going to develop that instinct that a good interviewer requires to produce great journalistic content.
God help me, I'm going to defend Simon Haupt. I think that it's not too soon to tell. I think Simon waited and there just hasn't been improvement. The problems with Shad at the beginning are still the same problems now. And I have to say this, like, I don't necessarily hold – I mean, just to respond to some of the things you said, they decided consciously not to go with somebody who knows radio. They went a different way. The CBC doesn't have hosts that know radio that they could have chosen. The CBC doesn't develop those people. The CBC – if you start working at the CBC as a young radio producer, you will be mentored and taught how to produce radio. If you want to be a documentary maker, you'll be taught how to do that. If you're a CBC reporter, people will teach you how to do that. If you're a bureaucrat there, you can go from a little cub baby bureaucrat and then you'll learn how to do that. Nobody teaches how to host radio at the CBC, and that's why they think they always have to poach people from, I don't know, Much Music or from the indie rock world or the indie rap world. But the thing is, you can't just put – it's so mean to put a complete rookie on a national stage like that. Like, Jen, you might have it in you to be a great rapper. I'm not saying you don't. You might have it in you to be like a world-class rapper. But the thing to do to get you there is not like if Shad had some horrible scandal and he was on a national tour to have you fill in for him. That would be a really mean way to introduce you as a rapper and then judge you 6 months later. Well, she hasn't. Like, that's just, it's not going to go well.
Jesse, let's not pretend that not hosting a radio show is as difficult as rap. I realize that we all think that we're very good at what we do, but come on now. Rap's way harder.
Rap is way harder than this. There's no question
about
that.
Way harder than this. I think the question we have to ask here is interviewing a skill that can be taught, or is it an innate talent? I don't know. If it's a skill that can be taught, then the blame here, if Shad is bad, the blame here lies with his teachers. The blame here lies with the people who have failed to teach him the instinct and the skills to do this and do this as well as he could. If it is, on the other hand, a raw talent, if it's something closer to that end of the spectrum, then, yeah, I think that you're correct to point out that the CBC has set him up to fail. And what they've done is actually very unfair to him. And I don't know which one it is.
I think it was so poorly considered, and the decision was made by, I think it was Cindy Witten, people who don't have a lot of radio experience, and they put him in a terrible position. But the thing that really annoyed me, Simon's piece, I mean, like, fine, fair enough. I don't really take much issue with what he said in the piece. The comments were atrocious. 350 comments that just – the thing is that nobody understood the racism that they were espousing in the comments. They don't think of themselves – but listen to some of these comments. And I'm not in the habit of, like, criticizing commenters, but there was such a uniformity to the response. Here are a few of them. CBC hired him out of political correctness, said one person. I've noticed that rappers tend to be witless, said another. And here's another one. If Shad was of the major demographic of this country, he would have been gone after a week.
We need to burn the comments.
Oh my God. The idea that this was like they had to sort of like compromise on, like, if you think that the CBC, in order to hire a black radio host, had to compromise on wit and conversation skills and verbal dexterity, then you do not know enough black people, you know, or maybe the CBC doesn't know enough black people, because that's a ridiculous dichotomy, as is this weird dichotomy that came out in the comment section of like, well, for all of his faults, Gomeshi was great. And I was so delighted when Chris Berube, a radio producer who used to produce for Gomeshi and now produces for Shad, said, like, I'm tired of this, but you have to admit Gomeshi was a good broadcaster.
Was Gomeshi great? Was he?
I think he had a way of sort of fooling the ear into making you think that this was really a one. But, you know, he made interviews about himself, said Chris Berube. It was all about celebrity flattery. And Berube went on, like, to say that if you're among the bring back Gomeshi people in the Globe comment section, you are human trash, said Chris Berube, which I appreciated reading.
I'm not super comfortable saying that Shad is bad. He's forever bad. I'm not comfortable with that position. I'm not sure that's completely correct. That said, we probably need to do a show in the comment sections and how we need to make them all go away now.
You know what? There's so much truth that comes out. I learned so much about the true feelings of and who the Globe and Mail's readers are. I don't know. I learned something from all those atrocious comments.
No, you don't. You learn something about a very, very narrow subset of the reading population. I have to believe this or I will kill myself.
You know, I think you may be right. I think that there may be a universe where Shad had received proper training. It's not in being on that national stage with all eyes on you after the flame out of Gomeshi with that production schedule, 4 shows a week, 5, they went down to 4. You know, I mean, like, that is not a good way to train and learn how to conduct an interview with the strict confines and the scripts that were fed to him. I don't see the improvement. And it doesn't matter what I think, because the CBC responds to outside stimulus. That's what got Shad in. And now that the Globe and Mail has gone and printed this piece, I think that Shad's days are numbered.
Really?
Everything I know about the CBC tells me that that's true.
I think that would be really unfortunate. I think, you know,
who doesn't want to see him succeed? He's a lovely, lovely guy. You know,
I think he's a great guy. I think he works really hard. I think he tries very hard. And I it's only been 6 months, man. Cut the guy some slack.
You know what, Shad, you are not listening to this, but maybe somebody who is listening to this and knows Shad, is just swing for the bleachers, man. You are probably on borrowed time. Throw the scripts away and have the conversations you want to have. Just to hell with it. Jed Gerson, that was your Canadaland Shortcuts. Thank you for joining me for it.
Thank you for having me.
I can be emailed at jesse@canadalandshow.com. If you are the gentleman I met in the barbershop who had a story for me, I lost your card. Please get in touch. jesse@canadalandshow.com. We are on Twitter at Canadaland. Jen, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter as well, Jen Gerson, or the comments section. I'm really diligent about reading them just every single time.
Our website is CanadaLandShow.com. Our crowdfunding site is Patreon.com/CanadaLand. I make this show with Katie Jensen. The next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. If you like this show, please support it.
I can never tell when you're trolling me.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.